Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for July 29th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the energy market with Dan O'Brien, an extension economist at Kansas State. And we'll get the latest on crop progress from some of the key growing states in the Corn Belt. And Don Day will have agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Tuesday afternoon. Hard red winter, September wheat settled at 611 and a half down 14, December 628 and a quarter down 12. Soft September wheat settled at 520 down 14 and three quarters, December 543 and three quarters down 14. September corn settled at 361 and a half down 6 and a quarter. December, 371, down 5 and 3 quarters. March of 15, 383, down 5 and a half. July, 399, down 4 and a half. August soybeans settled at 1226 and a half, down 10. September, 1121 and a half, down 15 and a half. November, 1095, down 12 and 3 quarters. August soybean meal, $395.40 down $7.40. September, $369.20 down $6. August soybean oil, $36.25 down $27. September, $36.34 down $26. August live cattle, now last trades here, $158.90 down $15. August feeder cattle, $221.65 up $147.50. And August lean hogs, the last trade, $121.07.50 down $2.60.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that rain is still expected to be restricted through the next 2 weeks outside of the rain event occurring next week, and the soil in most areas will be drier in 2 weeks than it is today. A combination of cool temperatures through the next week, favorable soil moisture today, and next week's rain should ensure crops outside of the southwestern Corn Belt into southern Illinois have enough soil moisture to develop in a favorable environment through the next 2 weeks. As long as timely rain continues through August, conditions for most crops should remain favorable. High temperatures later in the week will be in the upper 70s to the middle 80s, with a few middle 70s in the Great Lakes region most days, and a few upper 80s in the south on Sunday. Monday and next Tuesday will be a little warmer in the south, and highs will be in the upper 70s and 80s, with a few lower 70s in the south and a few middle 70s in the north. Low temperatures Wednesday will be in the 50s, with some upper 40s in the north and a fewer lower 60s in the southwest. Thursday through Sunday's lows will be in the upper 50s and lower 60s, with some middle 50s in the north. You're listening listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, it's a turnaround Tuesday, but usually when I think turnaround Tuesdays, I'm always opting for the low to high. And today, the turnaround Tuesday is high to low. Maybe it should be turn down Tuesday.
That would be a good thought for the day, Dave. And it was basically, we saw a shift in the weather forecasts that come out about 2 o'clock in the morning here, and were verified on the noon forecast to add a little more moisture into the totals a little sooner than what the forecast did yesterday. And that, of course, helped everything. We've got tremendous, we saw the crop ratings drop 1 and 2 percentage points yesterday. Not unusual at all for this time of year. Still on the second or third highest ratings we've had. And basically, we saw a little run-up yesterday with the idea that maybe we're going to start August off a little rough, but, you know, this morning's forecast says we're going to get some decent showers across the Midwest about the middle of next week.
I think there probably was some selling off of that little pop, too.
Oh, you mean when most of the Argentine farmers really come in and actually did move quite a bit
yes.
of grain? We saw some of the other farmers. You know, it was also a little bit of a commercial-inspired rally yesterday because they've been selling. We've been looking at all the announcements for these bean sales to China and unknown, and the farmer hadn't sold much. And I think that we saw that the farmers' offers were around that $11 mark, and I think a little bit of run-up went there, and they were able to pick up quite a few beans yesterday that put them in a lot better shape for their export sales for first off there.
Yeah, into probably, I would think, the October time frame, maybe?
Yeah. Now, and one of the main surprising points is we were reading today that basically the FOB areas it's booked up or looks like they'll be loading pretty much towards capacity down at the Gulf, you know, up through most of harvest already mm-hmm. here, and they're looking on to first of the year because the Chinese have been very aggressive with their purchase policy.
So this is the time of year when we're dying and living on every weather update.
It sure seems like that. I mean, the weather got pushed back a day or two on the noon forecast, and we saw a little bit of a pop back there, you know, closing on our short-term high is what we did in the November beans. They come back from 1091 back to 1096 there in the last minute of the day, sort of. So, we did see a little bit of short covering, sort of wondering on what the weather forecast might be overnight. I think that was profit-taking by some of the guys that sold earlier this morning. One of the things when we talk about that, though, the rail car rates are bid as high as $2,700. And last year that rate was only $700. So that's one of the reasons we're seeing really good basis levels at the Gulf, but it isn't coming back to the elevator back home here in Illinois and Indiana.
And who is winning the bids on these rail cars, by and large, I hear, is ethanol producers leading the elevators, trying to scramble to figure out how to clean up their last of the old crop.
Yeah, like I say, along the way, but that is one of the things, our freight rates, our barge rates, and mm-hmm. Rail car rates have really jumped up here. So it's sort of a false feeling when you look at the Gulf basis levels, and you come back to your local elevator, you think, God, they're really putting it to us, but it isn't because they're having to pay for these cars.
Can you make a bullish argument this time of year for corn or soybeans?
Well, I think, the one bullish thing is that farmers have an awful lot of on-farm storage. They've got better cash reserves than they had for years, and they do need to keep the corn and beans rolling for what book we have on, number one, out of the Gulf, and number two, out of our ethanol plants and our soy oil plants. And the meal has been very aggressively being sold here, too. So crushers are going to want to hold some beans or get their hands on some beans as soon as they can, too.
What is your best advice for hedgers at this point who need to do something, given they have more corn or beans than they thought they were going
to
have?
Well, that's a good problem to have more than you thought you were going to have. But, we're probably more of a seller of beans, probably through options by buying puts and selling some calls anytime we get over $11 on the November beans here, I think. And basically in the same respect, anywhere up around that 380, 390 basis of East corn.
Thank you much, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and he is in New Market, Indiana. He joins us every Tuesday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. Here are the details for NASA's latest crop progress report for the week ending July 27th. 78% of the corn crop is soaking versus 56% last week and the five-year rolling average of 75%. 17% of the corn crop is in dough stage versus the five-year rolling average of 16%. Corn conditions look like this. Good to excellent, 75%, down 1 percentage point from a week ago. Fair, 19%, poor, 5%, and very poor, 1%. 76% of the soybean crop is blooming versus 60% last week and the five-year rolling average of 72%. 38% of soybeans are setting pods versus 19% last week and the five-year rolling average of 31%. Soybean conditions look like this. Good to excellent, 71%. That's down 2 percentage points from last week. Fair, 23%. Poor, 5%. And very poor, 1%.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director for USDA NAS Heartland Region, with the Illinois Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending July 27th, 2014. Favorable weather conditions allowed producers to be busy baling hay and spraying crops this past week, with 6 days rated suitable for field work. The state average precipitation was 0.45 of an inch for the week ending July 27th, which is 0.45 of an inch below normal. The average temperature was 71.9 degrees. That's 3.6 degrees below normal. Corn silking reached 94%, ahead of the five-year average of 85%. Corn in the dough stage was 25%. That compares to 29% for the average. Corn was rated with 82% in good to excellent condition. Soybeans blooming progressed to 83%, ahead of the average of 72%. Soybeans setting pods reached 44%, and that's ahead of the average of 30%. Soybeans were rated with 78% in good to excellent condition. Topsoil moisture supply was rated with 12% short, 82% adequate, and 6% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply was rated with 1% very short, 16% short, 79% adequate, and 4% surplus. That is the Illinois Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending July 27th, 2014.
This is Glenn Goodrich with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service for the Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending July 27th, 2014. Cool, dry, windy weather saw a number of farmers hoping for a rainstorm, even as many attended county fairs this week. Average temperatures of the week ranged from 67 to 76 degrees, or 8 to 1 degrees below normal. The lowest recorded temperature for the week was 47 degrees, the highest 94 degrees. Statewide average temperature for the week was 70.8 degrees, which is 4.1 degrees below normal. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.11 to 3.67 inches, with a statewide average of 0.84 inches. Corn silking was at 88%, versus 79% last year and 79% five-year average. Corn doughing was at 13%, versus 0% last year and 12% five-year average. Soybeans blooming was at 84%, versus 70% last year and 69% five-year average. Soybean setting pods was at 51%, versus 32% last year and 29% five-year average. Though some farmers reported rolling up of corn and some short soybean plants on account of dry conditions, overall corn condition was 75% good to excellent, on par with 76% this time last year, while soybean condition was at 71% good to excellent, versus 74% this time last year. Double crop soybeans have been mostly planted. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending July 27th, 2014.
This is Katie Andel, Agricultural Statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending July 27th, 2014. Iowa experienced extreme temperatures this week with a high of 102 degrees at Sidney on Friday and a low of 51 degrees at Alcater and Mason City on Thursday. Temperatures for the week averaged 0.4 degrees below normal. Rain fell fell on the southeast one-third of Iowa on Tuesday. Precipitation occurred statewide except for southeastern Iowa on Thursday into Friday. Total rain for the week varied from nothing in southwestern and south-central Iowa to 4.28 inches at Fairfield Airport. Average precipitation for the week was 0.59 inches, less than the normal 0.98 inches. 85% of the corn acreage was in the silking stage or beyond, 2 weeks ahead of last year and almost 1 week ahead of the five-year average. With 14% of the corn in the dose stage, 78% of the corn crop was rated in good to excellent condition. 82% of the soybean acreage was blooming or beyond by the end of the week, 10 days ahead of the previous year. With 41% of the soybean crop setting pods, 74% of the acreage was rated in good to excellent condition. This is Katie Andel reporting from the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Dan O'Brien. He's an Extension agricultural economist at Kansas State University to talk about the market situation for ethanol and biodiesel, the agricultural energy sector. Dan, thanks for taking the time with us. You have prepped just a bit for this particular program. Tell me what it is that you see at this point for ethanol and biodiesel, and maybe we should start with ethanol.
Well, yes. When you look at the level of ethanol futures prices on Chicago Board Trade, CME Trade, we're moving somewhat sideways to a little bit higher. That aspect of the profitability model for ethanol plants is still holding up pretty decently. A lot of discussion about the declines that we've seen in the distiller's grain price, and no doubt that's having an impact on the profitability of ethanol plants, but still, at least to date, given the relative strength of the ethanol product prices, we're still seeing profitability projected for this month in the Midwestern ethanol plant model. So interesting to look at. I think that, Todd, it's such an interesting time in that we're seeing conflicts, geopolitical conflicts in some awfully important parts of the world that are affecting grain markets and have the potential to affect energy markets. And of course, we're balancing that from an ethanol point of view with markedly lower grain prices, which would be, of course, a positive from an ethanol plant perspective, in terms of lower costs and better profit margin. So you're kind of balancing all those issues and wondering if these geopolitical conflicts overseas will sometime roil up the energy markets and give us just that much more strength in terms of ethanol production profitability. And I think as at least Kansas farmers are looking at the broader picture digesting the idea that we're probably going to have markedly lower feed grain prices this fall, along with wheat and possibly soybeans as well. It seems like that we're holding out hope that the ethanol industry, with its strong corn usage and hopefully with the recovery in livestock feeding and other aspects of the feed grain demand sector all responding to lower prices and moving to the higher side, that really that's sort of the light at the end of the tunnel. Not so much that we see any major impact this fall on corn prices, but as we move on through the winter months and on into early spring, et cetera, that the increased usage that we'd see from profitability in ethanol production would help to alleviate the situation we're probably going to be seeing with regard to pretty low prices for corn and grain sorghum heading off into October, November, December of this year.
While ethanol is profitable for the plants, the co-products do have a shadow cast over them, the DDGs, maybe in two sectors. One, China won't take much of it anymore or are not willing to take some of it based on some GMO issues.
Right, at least until these GMO issues get resolved anyway. Right.
And then the livestock sector, beef cattle, other places in particular need to be using, but the numbers don't seem to be coming back just yet.
Yes, it is interesting in Kansas driving around seeing some of our, again, this is feedlot country in large part on the livestock side. We see some feedlots that they don't have a lot of numbers in them right now. And so that can't be positive for the demand side for distillers' grains. And take that along in tandem with the trade challenges that we're seeing now, as you've already mentioned with China and wherever else, it makes for a challenging situation, I think, for the distillers' grains markets. As you and I have talked at different times, that we're seeing on the ethanol plant side almost a situation akin to what we've seen in past years on the soybean processor side, where you've got two products against soybean meal, soybean oil. One of them at one time or another can be very profitable, and the other one having problems. And really, with those two, not too dissimilar problems as this. What do you do with the meal product? So here we're looking at ethanol plant, ethanol product prices holding up pretty well, but some real problems on the distillers grain side. So as long as we end up and maintain strength on the ethanol side, we may have profitability with in terms of plant production, but a problem in terms of what you do with what can become overburdening supplies of distillers grains. So I guess the different industries with these co-products, as they have, end up and operate in not too dissimilar of a fashion.
You mentioned soybeans and biodiesel production. Are those plants profitable?
Well, at least as we look at numbers at this time, it seems to be just slightly below profit, basically a break-even situation. Of course, you've got two things you're working with there as well. You've got the biodiesel price, which at least here of late has been sideways to a little bit lower, at least by the latest numbers that we have in hand. And you're also looking at the cost of soybeans coming into those plants. Not soybeans, but soybean products coming into those plants, soybean oil. So those are coming down a little bit as well. But it looks like we're basically a sideways to slightly lower situation in terms of profitability for those. And until we would see the biodiesel price start to move sharply higher, we may be at kind of a longer-term equilibrium in that until there's some change in that biodiesel and soybean oil price relationship.
Might that be started because of the RFS if U.S. EPA does not manage to change what the conditions for usage of biodiesel in the United States might be?
That's possible. And you know, there's some really interesting news articles coming out of Washington, where different political groups have gone in and talked to the EPA and gotten some message as to what might happen with the EPA's final decision on the level of the renewable fuel standard. And some of those reports are pretty positive, at least from an ethanol industry point of view, i.e. not necessarily holding with some of the initial announcements, that came out of EPA of cutbacks, or at least the leveling off that we'd seen before. So if, and to the degree that some of those rumors may come into reality, it could mean that the renewable fuel standard could be higher than what we've been anticipating over the last several months. And to some degree, I think, all else being equal, that would probably be positive for ethanol usage for corn and soybean product usage for ethanol production and biodiesel production and probably be supported. So I think taking all that into account, I think that it's probably fortuitous that we're making these decisions now in a time when we have what seems to be abundant supplies of both corn and soybeans coming on. If we were in a situation where we were going to be extremely tight, another drought in a row, it might not be quite so easy to make such a decision to actually raise the renewable fuel standard a little bit above what had been previously forecast on the part of the EPA. But again, we'll wait and see what their final initial announcements are. Pardon me, what their final announcements are.
Dan, thanks for taking the time with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Dan O'Brien is an Extension Agricultural Economist at Kansas State University. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
It's National Lasagna Day. It's also St. Martha's Day, patron saint of butlers, dietitians, cooks, innkeepers, and waitresses. On this day in agricultural history in 1796, Walter Hunt was born. He invented the first safety pin in 1849, which he called a dress pin. The pin was made out of brass wire about 8 inches long, coiled at the center and shielded at one end. He sold the rights to the pin for $400. By the way, Hunt began his inventing in his late teens with a machine to spin flax. In 1870, the first asphalt pavement was laid in the U.S. in Newark, New Jersey. In 1914, Baron Marcel Bic was born. A French inventor, he created the Bic pen in 1949. And in 1973, the Bic lighter. And in 1976, the Bic shaver. In 1977, Buffalo, New York declared this day Chicken Wing Day in honor of the famous Buffalo chicken wings created by Teresa Bellissimo in October of 1964. And in 1984, Fred Waring died. Waring provided financial backing for development of a blender to puree raw vegetables for his ulcer diet. The machine, originally introduced as the Miracle Mixer, debuted in 1937 and sold for $29.75. By 1954, the name had changed to the Waring Blender, and more than 1 million had been sold. And that's this day in agricultural history. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon, sir.
There is a developing story over the last several days to a week or so about these pockets of the Corn Belt that continually miss rain events. What can you tell us about that?
Well, there have been, and that's not unusual, especially when we get into these summer patterns where the storm systems that bring the rain aren't real big, and so there are areas that kind of get into a bad luck streak, and that's especially some areas of the southern Corn Belt. And those are areas, again, that with the next batch of precipitation may get skirted as well. Now, the winters will continue to be winters when it comes to the precipitation. Nebraska, Iowa, the Dakotas, Minnesota, northern Illinois, northern Indiana, northern Ohio, those areas still look to be in line to get some more precipitation over the next week or 10 days. But southern Illinois, southern Indiana, portions of Missouri, they're going to have some chances for precipitation, but amounts are going to be less.
Why does that happen?
Well, it happens every year. Rarely are you going to have a summer where everybody gets what they want or what they need. And you tend to get pockets that get dry, and they sometimes feed upon themselves. And one reason for that is when the ground gets drier, there's less evaporation going on, less moisture evaporating back into the air to help fuel the next batch of showers and thunderstorms. So a lot of times a dry pocket will sort of feed on itself to where the dryness perpetuates more dryness. A lot of times you have to have a bigger storm system to come in to do that. But it happens. However, when you look at the broad picture over the Corn Belt, you know, there are still many areas that are doing better than they are doing worse.
Is another narrative the cool temperatures and the potential for what that might mean in the Northern Belt later into the growing season?
Well, you know, that's certainly a concern, especially when we look at August. And from what we're seeing on August, August is going to carry forward a lot of the trends we had in July, which means, yes, there's going to be some warm days, but overall we may end up below normal temperature-wise in August. Now, indications are for September that it will warm up at least back to normal values. And so I guess I would rather see it a little cooler than normal in August than I would in September. So I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to get to the end of the growing season without an early freeze. We don't see that yet.
Generally speaking, where are we on growing degree days? I know we had a good start to the season.
Well, we did. You know, we are. Most areas are trailing. Are they trailing a ton? No. So I think that while we will probably finish August a little behind normal in many areas, it's not going to be so far behind that it's going to be a problem as long as we can have that warm September.
As you look out, what are your greatest concerns for the finishing of the crop?
I think the precipitation chances, although we just mentioned some dry areas, that will still be a concern. Overall, I am optimistic that August will be bringing rainfall in the adequate levels for most areas.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.